quietly. And there, oh Lord, there I saw him at last, as plain as I see you.
Saw who? Said his wife, beginning to share her husband's nervous terror.
Why, him, I'm a-tellin' you, said the shepherd. He was sticking halfway out of the cave, and seemed to be enjoying of the cool of the evening in a poetical sort of way. He was as big as 4 cart horses, and all covered with shiny scales, deep blue scales at the top of him, shading off to a tender sort of green below. As he breathed, there was that sort of flicker over his nostrils that you see over our chalk roads on a baking windless day in summer. He had his chin on his paws, and I should say he was meditating about things. Oh yes, a peaceable sort of beast enough, and not ramping or carrying on or doing anything but what was quite right and proper. I admit all that, and yet, what am I to do? Scales, you know, and claws, and a tail for certain, though I didn't see that end of him. I ain't used to 'em, and I don't hold with 'em, and that's a fact.
The boy, who had apparently been absorbed in his book during his father's recital, now closed the volume, yawned, clasped his hands behind his head, and said sleepily,
"It's all right, father. Don't you worry. It's only a dragon."
"Only a dragon?" cried his father. "What do you mean, sitting there, you and your dragons? Only a dragon indeed. And what do you know about it?"
"'Cause it is, and 'cause I do know," replied the boy quietly. "Look here, father. You know we've each of us got our line. You know about sheep and weather and things. I know about dragons. I always said, you know, that that cave up there was a dragon cave. I always said it must have belonged to a dragon sometime, and ought to belong to a dragon now if rules count for anything. Well, now you tell me it has got a dragon, and so that's all right. I'm not half as much surprised as when you told me it hadn't got a dragon. Rules always come right if you wait quietly. Now, please, just leave this all to me, and I'll stroll up tomorrow morning. No, in the morning I can't. I've got a whole heap of things to do. Well, perhaps in the evening, if I'm quite free, I'll go up and have a talk to him, and you'll find it'll be all right. Only please don't you go worrying round there without me. You don't understand him a bit, and they're very sensitive, you know."
"He's quite right, father," said the sensible mother. "As he says, dragons is his line and not ours. He's wonderful knowing about book beasts, as everyone allows. And to tell the truth, I'm not half happy in my own mind thinking of that poor animal lying alone up there without a bit of hot supper or anyone to change the news with, and maybe we'll be able to do something for him. And if he ain't quite respectable, our boy'll find it out quick enough. He's got a pleasant sort of way with him that makes everybody tell him everything."
Next day, after he'd had his tea, the boy strolled up the chalky track that led to the summit of the downs, and there, sure enough, he found the dragon, stretched lazily on the sward in front of his cave. The view from that point was a magnificent one. To the right and left, the bare and billowy leagues of downs. In front, the vale, with its clustered homesteads, its threads of white roads running through orchards and well-tilled acreage, and far away a hint of grey old cities on the horizon. A cool breeze played over the surface of the grass, and the silver shoulder of a large moon was showing above distant junipers. No wonder the dragon seemed in a peaceful and contented mood. Indeed, as the boy approached, he could hear the beast purring with a happy regularity. "Well, we live and learn," he said to himself. "None of my books ever told me that dragons purred." "Hello, dragon," said the boy quietly, when he had got up to him. The dragon, on hearing the approaching footsteps, made the beginning of a courteous effort to rise, but when he saw it was a